culture is so fascinating. It brings us together through celebration and food, and can teach us more about the world. Hi, Ryan Funk, and thank you for joining me for another episode of U Talk. On today's episode, we check in with Sonia Lundstrom and Craig Sidwall of the Swedish Cultural Association of Manitoba and the group's celebration of Sankta Lucia this past weekend. We'll also look at what happiness means to bicultural immigrants in an upcoming study by a PhD student at the University of British Columbia, Okanagan. Let's get into it.
I'm Sonia Lundstrom, and I'm the president of the Swedish Club. I'm also Icelandic, and most of my focus is with the Swedish Club because that's where that's where most of my energy and time needs to go. Craig represents us on the actual Scandinavian board. And what do I do? Well, I mostly coordinate it, kind of run things and get a vision of the future and keep things alive and energized and with new ideas and new opportunities.
Well, Craig, as a new face here, how about you just tell us a little bit about yourself and your role?
I'm Craig Sidwall. I'm the VP of the Swedish Club. I'm one of Sonia's minions. She is our Energizer Bunny out there, shaking hands and greeting people and kind of the face of us. I just kind of sit in the background a little bit more, do a lot of the communications, sit on the board of the building and try and help out wherever I can.
We're a team.
Of course, you know, things like this are only possible if everyone comes together. And I think that sense of unity is just, you know, it's a great example during this time of year now that we're heading into the Christmas season.
It's all about fun and fellowship like a family. And it's the wonderful feelings that you get from that. Our shared experience and bonding through our heritage and our culture. And that's what's so strong in all of us and so beautiful.
Amazing. So, Craig, what is the Scandinavian Cultural Center?
It is a shared building used by the five Nordic countries, their cultural associations. The five of us share it and support it and typically hold functions there as much as we can and bond there as much as we can.
Yeah. I mean, it's always exciting times. Sonia's always sending me invites to different events. It's unfortunate I won't be able to attend Sankta Lucia this weekend. But, you know, coming in, seeing the mural, seeing the other events, you had a concert that happened this summer, which was really, really exciting.
The opera singer. Wow. That's still with us. We're still on high about that.
Oh, of course. It's always exciting and it's always an inspiration to see how much fun you are having.
And we've had more guests from Sweden. We had Lena Jonasson come. And we're expecting the Swedish hockey team from Tulin coming in the December the 30th.
Very exciting stuff.
And we had Eva Hustel come. And each of them brings something and, you know, exciting things that we carry on, whether it's anchovies or little knit mitts or little ideas. We keep building on it. We love it.
So, Sonia, the Scandinavian Cultural Center, which is the five Nordic countries, they're all kind of like sister or siblings and cousins a little bit.
Yeah.
But for the Swedish Cultural Association, what makes Sweden uniquely Sweden?
Craig, do you want to answer that?
Well, I think you're right in that the five Nordic countries are like cousins, but we're also separate and distinct, you know, much like Europeans might look at North America and say, well, Canada and the U.S., they're really kind of the same. And really, we kind of are. But if you ask a Canadian or American, they would tell you they're distinctly different. So what are Swedes all about? I think typically, you know, a lot of Swedes embrace a thing they call Lagom, which is a philosophy of living simply, not too much of anything. Being reasonable and enjoying what you have. Swedes, maybe you might say they value quality over quantity. You know, it's not, they're not a, Swedes are not a people that are like to display a lot of wealth or success. They like to just enjoy it.
And the other thing about the Swedes of Manitoba, they settled differently. When they came here, they settled throughout Manitoba in all kinds of remote areas because they were, like Craig says, simple, content, wherever they were. So to connect with these people and that history and the culture, we've been the Swedes on Wheels. And every year we go to a different place. And this year we went to two. We went to Ericsson, and we bring our food and share our stories and our midsummer and our Dala horse and meet with people we've never met before, but we bond instantly. And then in the fall did a day road trip to Lundar, Eriksdale, Steep Rock, and Ashern. And
wow.
Again, it's so wonderful. To me, it's the simple things. It's the little things that we connect with, all of us with some music and some stories and being where our forefathers have been. And the memories that connect us through those wonderful, we're so grateful for our ancestors, and all of us want to be celebrating that.
Of course.
I'm talking too much.
No, it's all good. Sonia, we love hearing from you. So, a really cool event happening this weekend. Who wants to start with that and tell me what's all going on?
Santa Lucia has been something that we've been doing since the early 1900s, since we came here. And it's a celebration of bringing light at the darkest time of the year. And that's a simple thing. We celebrate the darkness. So it's dark with a little bit of lights in it. And Santa Lucia with lights in her hair and the rest of the parade come with lights through the darkness to bring the message of joy and love and peace to everybody. So it's a celebration singing Santa Lucia. It started in Sweden to celebrate, to bring to the poor. And they get it from the palace and give it to some of the poorest islands. And now in Sweden, Lucia buns are served by the oldest child to the elderly first thing in the morning. And then they parade down to the school and they celebrate. It's a very big celebration in Sweden. Here in Winnipeg, we've been celebrating it every year. And it's we have a marvelous group of people that come together. It's about the food, the Lucia buns, the coffee, the gingerbread. It's about the children and the families getting together that have got together through all these years. And now it's like a reunion. It's such a beautiful experience to share this story then with the other families that want to come and share it with us. So it's through food and singing. And we do our ring dancing around the Christmas tree and a like a family sing-along. It's a joyous time. It's celebrating this joyous time of the year. And everybody goes out there, I have to say it, on adrenaline, a beautiful, beautiful, loving, joyous feeling in their hearts, in their souls, and their tummies. It makes us all so happy. And we invite people, go share that with the world. That's about peace, and that's about love, and that's about kindness. And that's what we're trying to convey with it. It's been a joyous experience already. We've been partying for months, okay? First of all the connections with the ticket sales. Then the connections of the practices of all the children, all the families. We may not see them otherwise, but they come for this. And then we get all the former Lucias to come with their families to sing. And then the new people coming that connects through Lucia this joyous time. And then the baking bee, and we had about 14 of us, and we get together because we all like to cook. Oh, my goodness.
Of course. I mean, that's an integral part of culture and celebrations, right? The food.
The food. But it's in the making of the food. You know, we like to be working and doing something. And we made Christmas decorations at our fika, okay? So we made these little hearts, and we made Christmas decorations, and we're decorating our tree with them. And we all, the decorations on the tree are all right from Sweden. So it reminds us again the richness of our culture that has been brought here and that we keep sharing and sending out to the world.
Mm-hmm. So this is an invitation to anyone to kind of attend.
No, we have limited seating.
Limited seating. Okay. Are you already sold out for tickets?
We were sold out in November.
Wow.
Well, this is a hot thing.
Okay. Wow. That's really exciting.
Everybody's got the history of experiencing it. We want to come back. We're hooked on the experience.
That's awesome.
And we've got families coming from all over, from the States, from Dryden, from all over to celebrate this special Swedish event. Now, other cultures, other Scandinavian countries have a form of lighting the candles and things, but it's not like the Swedish people do.
You party a little harder in that sense.
You could say that, yes.
They do it differently. I think everybody has a party. Like the Danes have a wonderful party. Tonight, tomorrow night, the Finns, they'll have a wonderful party. This is sort of our kind of, it's sort of celebrating the simple things, celebrating the darkness and bringing light in the darkness of being together. It's quite simple.
Well, Sonia's touched on this a little bit, Craig, but why is it important to hold events like Santa Lucia, but also celebrating as cultural association as a whole? Why is that important?
The answer is the same answer that I think every cultural association in Manitoba would give you, right? It's a celebration of who we are and where we come from and a shared past and a shared future. And it's a great way to meet people that you haven't met before and establish new bonds and feel a part of something that is greater than yourself.
It's been a very busy year. Sonia, you talked about the opera singers who came by, and you've got the hockey players who are going to be coming in December, and Swedes on Wheels. What are some other things that happened this year?
Oh God, you haven't heard that. We want to have a snowfest jamboree out on the forks with a fire and singing and dancing around the fire. And these stories are so important. So we're hoping to collect further stories. Our web page is full of rich stories from all these places we've gone to. They're such authentic stories. They're so unique. And we're going to try and get more stories. And Craig's a writer and he's looking after that part. In the winter, we get together with our Zoom book club. And oh, we've got some exciting books and our Zoom movie nights. And then, these road trips have been pretty successful. We've hit most of the places of Manitoba. We did a trip to Lindesberg a couple times in Kansas, because that's the little Sweden of America, kind of like Islandadingadagalen is to the Icelanders. But this year, we're going to go to the American Swedish Institute in Minneapolis
Ooh, that's exciting.
June the 15th to celebrate Midsummer and meet the new director from Sweden and see that very historical part. So look out, the Swedes of Canada are coming to US of A. Like once you get south of the border, Minnesota is where they first immigrated to. We're going to meet all the Swedes along the way. We don't have to plan it. They'll all be coming out.
Yeah. Just everyone coming together. That's going to be really exciting. Oh, are there some other things, Craig, happening at the Scandinavian Cultural Center? Are there any cool events that are coming up from some of the other clubs?
Well, the biggest event of our year is in the summer, Folklorama. We hold our pavilion there. And everyone has a Christmas function there. There are lots of other clubs too. There's stamp clubs and card clubs that meet at the center. And gosh, but get Sonia at the center. A lot of our events are outside the center. We were at the Winter Cities Conference last year. We had people skiing on the river and things like that. But Sonia, help me with the events that are actually at the center.
Well, for New Year's, everybody comes along and brings its potluck and brings games, and we play games and eat. So all the cultures get together. It's a very casual kind of thing. A lot of the lunch club, Friday lunch club, closed down. We don't have our regular brunches. In the new year, we'll be having our brunches, and that's where we celebrate our culture again. Like in January the 14th, we're having Yule plundering, where we take down the Christmas tree by dancing around it again.
Lots of dancing.
We like the dancing. We try and get, because all ages get involved in the dancing. The young people just really love the dancing. And if everything is about intergenerational, we're all evolved, what shall I say? Evolving beautiful people.
A lot of the events cross the different clubs as well. We do a thing called TGIF once a month, where we just bring in a guest speaker that we feel will be of interest. The next guest speaker is going to be, gosh, I forget it, a woman. The topic is going to be, should Louis Riel be noted as the first premier of Manitoba? She wrote a book on the subject. Dang, I've drawn a blank on her name. Shame on me. But so we do that once a month. And again, that's welcome to all. So the clubs do separate events, but we do events together as well.
we have several different dance and choir groups, and the choir is having a concert on Monday night. And we have a fantastic Scandinavian choir that have, you know, there's young people that have sang there for years. It's excellent. And our dance group is very active. And our dance group often comes with us on our road trips. Okay. So, and we have the young Scandia folk dancers. And then we got, I forget, well, there's the two groups, the younger and the older. And then we got the children. And the children is very popular that Saturday morning at the Scandinavian Center. And they do lots of different entertaining also and events.
I was going to ask you a little bit about Snowfest. It's a very different year this year for Snowfest.
Well, that's why we're always different. We rise to the challenge. But I actually had a meeting around the campfire at the Forks with Andrew Swanson from Trails Winnipeg, because we can't do it. We're older people. We can't do it by ourselves, but we got a lot of ideas. We try and partner with other people to make these things happen. On our own, though, we're planning skiing Mondays at Kildonan Park. Every Monday, 1:30, we're off skiing. And we may have an indoor snow fest. We've done that before, but we changed during COVID. Well, Ryan, you remember, we had you out in the kick sleighs.
I was just remembering last time, you know, it was really fun going out in the cold, being out on the river. And I'm just interested to see if we're going to be able to do that this year, because it's been pretty warm outside so far.
We'll think up some creative thing. What about just dancing at Assiniboine Park or something around a campfire?
Great. And to kind of wrap things up, you're talking about getting all generations involved, that these celebrations are intergenerational. Is there any kind of conversations about getting younger individuals involved in the more leadership positions at the center?
It is universal. And what is happening with Lucia is the former Lucias are coming back and wanting to be involved. So we're doing that exact thing. We got one of our Lucias now leading the ring dances. And so it's just, I don't know, it's not a direct thing. That's the universal question for churches, for everybody. But how I see it is intergenerational and an opportunity to teach and mentor these people and support them into taking on new roles and let go a little bit. Let go and let it happen. I've got a girl mentoring me to be the leader next year to coordinate, hopefully. And so as they get supported, we got some bright, bright people. We got opera singers singing in Lucia. They come from the opera. They started singing at Lucia. Now they're coming to sing. It's just really outstanding.
Amazing. Craig, Sonia, thank you so much for taking this time to share a little bit about what's going on at both the Scandinavian Cultural Center and the Swedish Cultural Association. Are there any final words that you'd like to leave with people?
Good Yule and good net air for everybody.
Exactly.
And one thing they're doing in Sweden after COVID is they're encouraging everybody to say, hey, hello to everybody. Everybody you meet, whether it's sitting on a picnic bench, say hello. It can make a world of difference. It's just a gentle act of kindness. And the Swedes are really into that. So that's my parting message.
Very well said, Sonia.
To the winds, they have stories to tell.
There's a lot we can learn from the immigrant experience. A PhD student at the University of British Columbia, Okanagan, seeks to understand the bicultural immigrant narrative better. What does happiness mean to these individuals? What can we learn from studies like this? And how does a study like this work? Let's find out on this episode of UTalk.
Thank you very much, Ryan, and thank you so much for having me. I'm super excited to talk about my project today. So my name is Anne. I am a clinical psychology student at UBC Okanagan, and I'm a third-year PhD student and also trained to be a clinical psychologist.
What got you interested in psychology? I have a couple of friends, and my partner took psychology when she went to school. So it's always fascinating to learn a little bit about people and why they're interested in the subjects that they are.
I've always been really interested in human behavior, why people do things. So I thought psychology for my undergrad would be the perfect fit for me. And it really was. I really enjoyed my time as an undergrad learning about these foundational things about human behavior. And then I started working with a professor at my university, Mount Royal University in Calgary. And he introduced me to a lot of kind of research methods. So for grad school, I wanted to continue pursuing that, but also I really wanted to be in a field that helped people. And so clinical psychology was kind of the best fit where I could do both research and also help people in the field that I eventually get into.
Well, that's awesome. I think human behavior is also so interesting, like why people do the things they do. And I think it's always great as individuals for ourselves to kind of dissect our own behaviors and understand, okay, why is it that I feel this certain way? What is it about my environment that maybe has molded my behaviors or molded kind of my perception on things? So the field of psychology, it's really, really cool to see individuals like yourself looking at it to better understand, you know, just humanity as a whole.
Yeah, I think you're totally right. Our environment has a lot to do with it. And I think specifically going into the research that I went into, I think culture is a huge part of it. And not just ethnic culture, but also our own cultural identity and how that intersects with other people's cultural identities. So yeah, very interesting stuff.
Yeah, so when you reached out to us, you were interested in talking about your dissertation research project. So before we kind of get into that, what exactly is a dissertation research project? What is kind of the purpose of it for our listeners out there?
Oh yeah, that's a good question. I'll try my best to answer it. It's so I'm in a PhD program, and to graduate from my PhD, there are a few milestones to reach. And one of them is basically completing a research project. And so a dissertation would be part of the PhD track versus if you were in your master's, maybe we would call it like a thesis project. So it's just really a long document of something we're maybe interested in doing or interested in exploring more.
So it's an opportunity for kind of your teachers and professors and things to kind of see the work that you're doing and how you would kind of be within the field once you get there, sort of thing, right?
Yeah. Like at the end of this, hopefully to pass, we would have to do kind of this oral examination where your committee members ask you questions about that dissertation to make sure there's enough information that you understand it. So yeah, that you can kind of proceed into graduation.
Of course, you want to graduate so you can continue to do more projects, continue to dissect the human experience. So this one, bicultural immigrant, I don't think I've ever thought of that or heard that term before. So when you brought it up, I was like, wow, what does that mean? And I guess, I mean, looking into it a little bit further, I was like, oh, okay, that's what it is. But for a lot of people, this might be something that's like, what does that mean? So please explain it for us. What is a bicultural immigrant?
So there's two components to that phrase, one being bicultural and the other being immigrant. So an immigrant is someone who has maybe the purpose of moving to a different country permanently. And I think one of the common misunderstandings of an immigrant, at least through my own experience, is that people believe that immigrants go to another country at their own accord. But that's not always the case, especially for like refugees, asylum seekers. So there's kind of that push and pull factor. What pushes them to leave their country of origin, their home country, which is not always willingly for like security reasons, war, economic reasons?
Well, with the Ukraine-Russian war right now, like the number of Ukrainian diaspora that's now here in Canada and trying to learn what does it mean to be like a Canadian or like a new Canadian as well?
Yeah, absolutely. Ukraine, Palestine, like all of these different places going through just how can we live in a safe environment, and what pulls them to the country that they are immigrating to. So that's an immigrant. And bicultural is when, in kind of the most simple sense, it's someone who has lived experience of two cultures. So someone could be multicultural, but for someone bicultural, it's usually two cultures that they've have lived experience of and have internalized for themselves.
So that would be someone who has moved here to Canada and embraced Canadian culture while still celebrating and embracing, you know, their heritage and the culture where they were born.
Yeah, like in research, they get really into the specifics of the definition. But I think even someone who considers themselves bicultural could embrace both cultures or could generally just have been exposed long enough to both cultures.
Oh, that interesting. They consider themselves.
Yeah.
Okay. Why did you want to approach this subject for your research project? I mean, it's incredibly interesting, and like we're just barely touching the surface of what it even means here.
Mm-hmm. In research, there's kind of a couple of reasons why I wanted to do this project. One of them is because immigrants are a really understudied population in psychology, and when we look at it in even further, we understand a lot about sort of the stressors of adjusting to a new culture for immigrants. Like there's so many different factors. And we also know a little bit about the coping mechanisms that they use in that adjustment period during their immigration experience. But what hasn't been explored and what I'm hoping to look at into more is how immigrants see happiness. So In positive psychology research, we know how Westerners understand happiness, what that means to them. We understand how Easterners understand happiness. But what about immigrants who sometimes have Western ideologies and Eastern ideologies? What does happiness mean to them in the context of an immigrant experience? So I really wanted to know that. And having had a lot of conversations with my friends who are newcomer immigrants, first generation immigrants, I am a first generation immigrant myself with my family. So kind of these own personal experiences and the experiences around me really inspired me to kind of pursue this topic, which I think is really relevant for a lot of people, especially in this day and age.
Oh, definitely. Well, with the audience that we've kind of cultivated and the people we've connected to, you know, we usually cover a lot of the challenges that they're facing. So when you're bringing up this topic of happiness, I think it's just so important to understand, you know, how can we better relate to immigrants and newcomers coming to our country as people who were born here? And how can we better develop society in order to celebrate and ensure that people can achieve that happiness?
That's exactly it. Yeah, kind of building more tools or structure or support for that immigrant experience as they settle into a completely new culture.
What sort of things have you been hearing about in terms of, you know, happiness or maybe even challenges that people go through in their immigrant experience? For the people we talk to and the stories we've covered, a lot of it is the challenge of losing culture. That's a big concern that a lot of the people are having, particularly right now in the Muslim and Arabic community here in Winnipeg. A lot of their kids are like, why would I want to speak Arabic? Why would I go to the mosque and everything? Like, I just want to be a Canadian sort of thing. So there's kind of a little bit of fear that these newer generations might lose a lot of the heritage and culture and knowledge. So I'd just be interested to hear what kind of conversations and things you have been hearing.
That's a really great question, Ryan. And it's so multifaceted. I think through the perspective of the parent, like, why would you want your children to lose like the cultural heritage where you grew up from, the where you came from? But also through the perspective of the children, I think there's a lot of difficulties, especially if you're a child of a first generation immigrant, or if you're someone who had moved at a young age. Adjusting to Canadian culture helps you to fit in with your peers. So I feel like if that's your goal, of course you want to adjust to just Canadian culture. There's this idea of what we call cultural distance. So if, like, for example, if you moved from the UK to Canada, the cultural distance is shorter if you moved from China to Canada. For cultures with a big cultural distance, sometimes those cultures come into conflict and it can cause almost like this identity crisis. And it's a lot easier, I think, to shift or just internalize one culture a lot more than the other culture, especially if those two cultures are so different from each other. So yeah, I think I can see a lot of different perspectives around sort of situations like that. But in terms of your question about like the happiness research, I think one thing that always sticks out to me is how the immigrant experience shapes someone's understanding of happiness. There was an article with a participant who, when she was asked about like coping mechanisms, she said that seeing her children succeed was a way of her coping with her like living in Canada as a first generation immigrant.
That was one thing I was probably I was thinking is like, yeah, like parents who came here and some of the conversations I've heard from people is like, you know, they're trying really, really hard to create that new life or that new life for their kids. And
Or kind of like it blends almost with the happiness of the kids. Yeah. Absolutely. So it's always like, I think what I've come across so far is every immigrant experience is so unique and so different. So it'll be interesting to see how this dissertation project goes.
Definitely. Like, it's just so vast, so wide. And like, I'm just interested what it is, what sort of perspectives. And like, you're mentioning like the distances between different cultures can have such a major change for what happiness and what perspectives could look like.
There's so many factors. So I think shedding light a little bit on the project, I'm using quantitative and qualitative methods. So using a survey method, but also interviewing newcomer immigrants. And the reason that I want to use both methods is because I think it really helps to amplify the uniqueness, but also doing it in a way that kind of helps to summarize, like, what do we know about the immigrant experience and the happiness of immigrants, of newcomer immigrants, and how does that impact or help them cope with their time here?
And those two different ways of achieving that information, like you're mentioning, the survey and the interview, might achieve very different sort of answers, sort of thing. When you're talking to someone, you know, potentially maybe they're more reserved and will give different answers versus a survey where they're like, oh, it's online, I can just, you know, say it out through it. Or potentially in those interview processes, you know, you really connect with someone and then they can really, really open up to you on things that they might not even or thought about when filling out a survey.
Exactly. Yeah, I think I'm still very, very early stages of recruitment. But what we're seeing in the interviews is that people can dive deeper into their experiences, whereas the survey gives us better, bigger picture of things. So hopefully that information, they inform each other.
Walk me through what it's going to kind of look like at the end once you gather this information. How is it kind of compiled and put together to make this dissertation?
That's a great question, Ryan. I don't know if I've thought about it that far yet, but we're going to use what we know from the survey, collect all of that data, run through it, make sure it's valid responses, et cetera. And then for the qualitative part, I'm going to transcribe the interviews, work with my committee members to do that. And then looking at both data separately, seeing how they inform each other and seeing where that common ground is will be.
Well, it sounds really exciting. What is sort of the timeline of creating a project like this? Like, how many hours approximately does it take from kind of conception to be like, yes, this is the idea I want to do?
Mm-hmm.
Then collecting all those interviews and then compiling that. What is that ETA sort of thing?
So I think I'm going to speak from my own experience, and I think it's different for everybody.
Of course.
It took me a year to think of a question and to talk with my supervisor about it and to really refine that question, to write out like a proposal, what that looks like, how are we going to go about it? So things like that took about a year and a half before I actually got to go around into recruiting, and then writing it up will take another maybe year or so before I can actually defend it. I think there's a good reason why PhD degrees take 4 years. Like,
oh,
I really do think it takes the whole time. Yeah.
I think it's important just for people to know about like the process for these, because I know a lot of people who are outside the sciences might be like, you know, why does everything take so long, sort of thing.
Yeah.
It's like, well, it's a lot of work when you're trying to explore these ideas, figure out the proposals,
mm-hmm.
because like a lot of times it takes funding to do things like this, and you have to be able to sell your idea to funders.
It's a very creative process. It's time consuming, but it's very rewarding. But I think a huge part of why we want to do it right is so that, for example, this dissertation project is so relevant to the general population and the general public. So being able to do this project right will help in the dissemination process after the project is completed, so that I have the right tools, I can say the right things and tell the public what I learned, and hopefully help them, governmental policies, healthcare organizations, things like that.
You kind of answered a little bit, but what can we learn from a study like this? What can we all take and apply to our lives when we're looking at what does happiness mean for someone of a bicultural nature?
That's a good question. I think it's twofold. So for immigrants, I can see that when they hear this, the results, so hopefully my hope is that they can relate to it, that a lot of them can see themselves in it and know that they're not alone in their experiences, that this is very common. And for the general public who may be not bicultural or they're from here or have lived here a very long time, can empathize with the situation, can empathize that the immigrant experience is so much more than just, oh, moving from one country to another. It's so complex. It's so multifaceted. So I'm hoping that there can be a lot of compassion derived from this study when the results are out.
Yeah. It's not just, as you mentioned, not moving from one place to the other. Like, it takes an emotional toll, a mm-hmm. physical toll for some. It's a spiritual toll. And I mean, it's not even taken into account. One example is a person moved from Canada to Ireland and their prescriptions weren't covered in Ireland. It's like, well, what do you do in that situation sort of thing? Like, it's just there are so many different pieces that can apply to it that you might not even think about until it's that sort of situation.
Exactly. I completely agree. Like, there's just so many intricacies to think about.
How can we help? How can people participate in this program?
So there is a survey link out there, and it's a really simple survey to complete. Anybody can take it. It takes maybe 10 to 15 minutes. The fun part of it is that there is a chance to win a gift card at the end of it if you are selected. It's a draw. And if anyone out there who is interested in sharing their experience as a newcomer immigrant, so if you've moved to Canada less than 5 years ago, you can take the survey and indicate that you're interested at the end of the survey.
Thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me about this project. I really hope it works out and you get the answers that you're looking for and we can kind of make a difference and change perspectives. I mean, it's going to be a little while till it kind of all wraps up and you've defended it, but you mentioned your goal is to help people. Are there any other projects or things that would be kind of your dream to be a part of?
Well, first of all, thank you, Ryan. I really appreciate this opportunity to talk about this. It's always exciting to talk about immigrants and mental health. So, right now, I think I'm still trying to figure out, I guess, as a grad student, what I want to do afterwards. But I think having more emphasis of mental health care on immigrants would be an amazing sort of direction or type of project that I would love to work on in the future, or really just more accessibility of mental health care.
Hey, thanks for listening. Make sure you tune in every Tuesday for more episodes of UTalk. And if you're interested in participating in this study, make sure you check out the episode at u-channel.ca. I'm Ryan Funk. This was UTalk. And have yourself a good one.
You're real good at building walls, walls that no one else can see. You're real good at building walls, yeah, walls that separate you from me. And now I try to hammer them down, I try to hammer them down. I ended up breaking you down.
I ended up breaking us down. Your walls had such nice windows, yeah, with pretty flowers that smelled so sweet. Your walls had such nice windows, yeah, from where you would smile back at me. And I tried to shatter them down. I tried to shatter them down. I ended up breaking you down. I ended up breaking us down. Now those windows, they don't open for me. I wonder, did they ever really, will they ever open for me? I guess we'll never know. I guess we'll never know. You're real good at building walls, walls that no one else can see. I pray one day those walls will fall, yeah, and let your light shine on me. Yeah, let your light shine on me. Yeah, let your light shine.
Gone ever on just just one tree. I remember aspen groves, they were born from far below, underground and out of sight. From one tree became the might. Oh, we're standing in one place, ever watching, holding space. Seedling, sapling, stately tall, cycles one becomes the all. I remember aspen groves, they were born from far below, underground and out of sight. From one tree became the might. I remember aspen groves, they were born from far.